Season 2, Episode 7, back in the studios in Cork. And I'm delighted to be joined this week on the podcast with probably the rockiest rocker to come from Cork, Mark Daly. How's it going, bud? You're very welcome.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
So this is kind of like take two, because you were one of those episodes that I done a couple of years back.
Yes.
And here we are, but it's nice now to have you in person as opposed to a 3x3 on my computer screen.
Face-to-face is brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, how's things with you, man? You've been busy.
Been busy. All good. Tried to make the most of the COVID time and write a record, which is what a lot of musicians did, and got one written and recorded and ready to go now.
Yeah, it's out December.
So this tour is after coming along really quickly. So we panicked and got a 4-track EP together first because the whole album wasn't mixed and mastered yet. So the plan is the 4-track EP December and the whole record in March.
I look forward to that.
Thank you very much.
I absolutely look forward to that. And anyone that's listening to this podcast tonight, because obviously we're pre-recording it, when this goes out, you actually will be in the United States on your tour.
Yes. Yes, I can't wait to get back there.
So when are you heading?
November 30th, and got a 3-week run and then home for Christmas and then back out again.
Unbelievable.
So I can't wait.
Fab. And you're with Jeff this time again?
Out with Jeff again. We've built up a little like family relationship. Like we share band, crew, everything. And it's just this really fun tour. I can't wait to do it.
Brilliant. Now, Mark, I asked you to come on the podcast this week to chat about the 4 songs that you've written that are most personal to you.
Yes.
Now, the first song that you've chosen is Gotta Run. Why did you choose this one?
I chose Gotta Run because it's kind of a reminder song to keep a good attitude, to always say yes to things that are not so easy to say yes to, like tours when you have a young family. And it's kind of about following your gut. And it's kind of an upbeat song, which is rare for me, if you heard my last record. But yeah, this one's a bit more upbeat and powerful and a positive reminder to just, you know, follow your gut, follow your dreams. That kind of cheesy stuff, you know?
Yeah, because I guess even the opening lines, when you're lost and cannot find a way to unwind or trust your mind, why don't you just run away?
Yes.
So you're not actually running away from anything, are you?
No. It's just making sure I don't fall into this trap of like a dull and boring existence in my head. I'm like, this has to be the reminder to keep going, keep driving forward.
What I like about it too, I love the start, grabs you by the cojones and drags you quite literally kicking and screaming into the song.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll have a listen to it and then we'll come back and we'll chat some more.
Brilliant.
Okay, so this is the first song that Mark has chosen this week. This is the rock and roll Gotta Run.
You gotta rise.
Wowzer. I love the guitar at the very, very end. He just goes absolutely nuts.
It goes
nuts.
Mad, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I love that bit. It's kind of frantic ending, isn't it?
Yeah, and the bass, I love the bass too, and the chorus, you got to run. It's this real driving bass.
Yeah.
But then at the very end, the bass and the guitar together. Oof.
I love it as well. That ending just gets it for me. I love it.
Now, when you were writing this song, was that the ending that you wanted?
No, that wasn't planned out at all. I actually went into the studio with Sasha Paith. We kind of just partnered up on this whole record. Yeah, he's from the band Avantasia.
Okay.
They're a big band in Germany, and he's a producer for them and the guitar player, and also works with like tons of bands from around the world, mostly in metal. And I kind of hit him up during COVID, and a long shot. I was like, I don't know if he'd be interested in hearing a couple of my demos. So it was just me in my bedroom, acoustic guitar, playing like that song, for example. And it was just basic acoustic vocals, but I had the structure, I had the idea for it. So gladly, he was like, I actually really like this and I've wanted to do a rock record. So I got right time, right place.
Did you have the idea though, you know, when you wrote it in your bedroom with your guitar?
Yeah.
Was it going to be a chilled out tune, or did you envisage that this could be...
I knew it wasn't going to be a chill out one. I kind of had a Foo Fighters-y kind of thing in my head, you know, because that kind of style. Mm. I was like, when the full band gets on this. So the plan was for the full band to play. But then when COVID happened, it was just me that went in the end to Germany to record it.
Yeah, I remember and that on when so, you were going there, yeah?
Yeah, so Sasha was playing drums, bass, guitar as well. Like the two of us just sat in his studio and did it. But he came up with that ending and he's just... He was unbelievable to work with.
Yeah, just, it's a sick ending because it really, it's like a climax and
yeah,
boom,
yeah.
Just leaves you.
It does.
And it leaves you wanting it again.
Which is fantastic and glad to hear that.
Now, the band that's touring with you in the States, I know you introduced them all on social media. Are they all American-based guys or any of them from here?
Well, we've James Brown. I think you've met James Brown a couple of times. He's been a kind of always lead guitar for the last few years. Mm. He must be sick of me at this stage. He's actually out in Seattle at the moment. They're rehearsing for the tour. But the rest of the band, I've got Jack Ross is from Scotland, but he spends a lot of time in the US as well. And the other boys then are from the US.
And how did you meet these guys?
All from tours over the years. I met James Brown at the Battle of the Bands in Cypress Avenue. And we just got chatting and we just had the same, you know, kind of style and it just hit it off. And now we just... This is years now later, we're still rocking it together.
That's fantastic. I also love the line in the song, when the fight, it gets so bad, you lower your hands and take all the punches, it might be time to walk away.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the thinking there?
When, I suppose, life, if it's like hitting you and you just have to move on to something else, if it's not working. Kind of felt like that with my last record. I ended up doing a record that was more chilled out than I wanted it to be.
Mm.
And... It was kind of scary to go back to this direction because, you know, I was in the Voodoos years ago and this is kind of back to that hard rock kind of vibe. That's where I wanted to go. And I was like, well, if it's not working in this place, I got to move on to the next one.
And was there a fear in doing that? Were you a bit nervy?
Yeah, because the last record, I put so much work into it, working with a guy called Kelly Gray, and we really poured our hearts and soul into it. And then I was just like, I need to go back to doing what I absolutely love. And that's full band rocking out and... rock songs, you know.
Yeah, and obviously you get the opportunity to do that on tour with the band.
Yes, that's playing live with those guys is just a pleasure. Really is. We really like to rock out.
Now, let's go way back to the beginnings of you, Mark Daly, the musician. Growing up at home, what was it that got you into music? Was there a musical background in the house the whole time? Were there influences there?
I think I'm grateful that my dad used to play like Led Zeppelin records, Pink Floyd, ELO. Anytime we're in the car, that's what he was playing, the classic rock, the good stuff, I would say. Like, it was like, put on that, like ELO, I loved, like he'd have that on repeat. My mom was a Garth Brooks. She is a Garth Brooks, massive Garth Brooks fan. And that would be on all the time on a VCR player. It would be his concert. And he was obviously a great showman. And I used to watch that on repeat as a kid. So I kind of got influenced by kind of his stage presence and then the rock music through my dad and kind of pushed them both.
Because stage presence is everything for a frontman for any band, but especially a rock and roll band.
Yeah.
I mean, you're your own person, but growing up, who would have been the front man that you would have looked at and went, wow, yeah, they got it?
I love Steven Tyler. I love watching Steven Tyler, just the way he performs, the way he interacts with the crowd and stuff from anything live. I've never seen them actually live, Aerosmith, but any videos I watch, I'm like, just, he's such a cool guy.
Yeah, I actually saw a video recently, I think it was on TikTok. You can see everything on TikTok now.
Yeah.
And it was him playing a piano and singing. And I think it's quite recent.
Okay.
And he's still, his voice still
is insane.
Has it.
Insane.
I mean, what age is he? He must be pushing close in his 60s, pushing to 70.
He's probably 70. Yeah. Yeah. I actually would nearly say he's in his 70s. Yeah. Yeah.
You've told me, I guess, some of the bands that your dad would have played you and what would have got you into it. But then as your own tastes kind of developed, who influenced you?
Well, I suppose once I hit like 13, 14, I started listening to my own, like that's where I created my own like taste of music. But then there was some good music coming out then as well, like Linkin Park, Hyper Theory came out when I was just leaving primary school probably. Stained, like Break the Cycle, that album, I used to play that.
It's an incredible album.
I love that album,
isn't it?
But that one really got me into rock music.
That Epiphany song, is it Epiphany?
That's my favourite song in the album, actually. Wow. That's such a powerful one.
I actually got to see them in, it was called The Point Depot then.
Oh, yeah.
When they toured that album and Stone Sour opened for them.
Oh, nice, yeah.
And yeah. I just happened to come across tickets and I ended up going to them.
Wow.
And they were amazing.
Yeah.
And I think they're still going.
They're still going, but the singer is also in it. Like, he does his own country stuff, like really country, and has the country twang. It blows my mind that he can do the two. It's so weird. Yeah, but there's loads of other like rock bands, but I like Guns N' Roses and stuff. I'd always fall back into the earlier stuff because I just loved it so much.
What about the Seattle grunge scene? Were you a fan of that music?
Yes. Yeah. My sister got me into it. She was like, you have to listen to Nirvana. You know, there's always a someone that tells you have to listen to it. But she used to listen to Nine Inch Nails and Nirvana and all that. And like about 6 months before, she was listening to Steps and Five and stuff. It was like all of a sudden she was like a goth, you know. And I was like, okay. And then I was like, what is she listening to? And then I started listening to it and I was like, oh, okay. And even like Stone Sour and System of a Down, that Toxicity album.
Mm.
I mean, there's a million albums, but those ones are just jumping out at the moment. But that Toxicity album I played on repeat.
Mm. I always remember, it's funny actually, because you mentioned Linkin Park and when that new metal kind of scene broke. And to me, when that, like it changed that generation of music. We said the early noughties, late 90s, early noughties, right?
Yeah.
But to me, it was very similar to when the grunge scene came out. That was a massive game changer for the music.
It was. And I was lucky enough to live in Seattle and go around to the places that Nirvana were playing and Pearl Jam. And we played in the Moore Theatre in Seattle. And that's where Eddie Vedder jumped off the rafters and all this. And it was like just steeped in music history there.
What's it like when you walk on stage to play a gig knowing who's walked on that stage before?
When you go in the dressing room and you see the framed posters up on the wall and like, it's just mad. It's like you see the tour rider and stuff, what they used to order and all this. And it was a crazy time for music, I'd say, in Seattle.
Yeah, I remember watching it was a documentary, but there were some very funny points in it. And the one was, you know, the shirts that they used to wear? You know, they used to wear all those plaid shirts,
yeah?
And when grunge music broke, that these shirts now were selling in Hollywood for like $150, $200. And the people in Seattle couldn't believe it because it only cost them $5 to buy one.
Yeah.
And the whole story about where the name the grunge scene came from, one of the big papers in New York rang a music studio in Seattle. And the girl that answered the phone, there was a couple of them in the office, and they were like, so what's this scene? What's this, you know, this whole scene that's coming from Seattle called? And she kind of looked at the others and she giggled and said, it's grunge.
Just made it up.
And then suddenly it made all the papers the next day, because I guess if you look at the bands that were under that grunge umbrella,
yeah,
they were all kind of different genres, really.
They were. There was no real copycats. It was just that. Yeah.
Like they were serious performers, you know?
Yeah.
Like, funnily enough, I didn't like Nirvana when they first came out.
Yeah.
I fell in love with Pearl Jam straight away.
Yeah.
Stone Temple Pilots. And then I kind of... I think Kurt Cobain was dead and everything before I kind of got into them.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, so this is what all the fuss was about.
Yeah, yeah.
Just, I guess, do you know.
I've heard people saying, like, I just can't stand Nirvana. I just can't do it. And that's fine too, you know. But I was kind of the same. I was like, obviously I heard the, you know, Smells Like Teen Spirit and all that. But when I took a deep dive into it, some of the stuff is just incredible. Mm. Obviously, there's a couple of tracks in, and I'd be like, not for me.
And I also think that, though, like growing up for me, the MTV Unplugged was one of the greatest Amazing. Things ever to grace yeah. the TV. But all those bands on MTV Unplugged were incredible. For me, they're probably the best performances.
Wouldn't it be so cool if they brought the MTV Unplugged thing back?
I know.
And just because we're in a quite nostalgic phase at the moment, aren't we? Like there's rock music seems to have a good revival right now. Mm. There's a lot of good rock bands coming out of America, from the UK, Ireland, everywhere really. And yeah. I think it'd be really cool if they ended up, like, if music TV was popular again, it'd be really cool.
Sure, you look at what's on MTV now. It's kind of pitiful, really.
Yeah, it really
is. All these, was it 90 Day Fiancé and Teen Moms.
But there's actually a market for it now to bring back that kind of thing. Maybe some YouTube channel will invest in it and do it, and you can watch it around the world kind of thing.
Wow, that would be class. Yeah, maybe we should do that.
We should do that, yeah.
Yeah, we start sending out texts.
You know what? You need to delete this podcast so no one steals your idea.
We'll edit this out. It's fine, it's fine.
Perfect.
It's fine.
Perfect.
Okay, we'll go on to the second. Oh yeah, just before we go on to your second song, something that you said at the very start about the tour and how grateful you are, and you'll take these opportunities because you've a young family. Is it hard leaving your young family behind?
Super hard, to the point that I can't really think about it until, like, anytime I do, I get really upset, and then I'm just like, okay, you just got to keep going. And like, there's obviously a lot of tour prep and promo and everything, so that's kind of is a distraction. But then, like, my daughter would say something like, I wouldn't see her for a night, and I'd see her the next morning, and she'd be like, I missed you so much. And I was like, oh, how am I going to do it? You know,
I know
it's really hard to juggle the two,
but I guess you got to get into a bubble and sort your head out with regards to it, don't you?
Yeah, but anytime I go on tour, then it's just, it's so fast paced. It's like the first run is 3 weeks, and that will feel like 5 minutes, and I'll be home for Christmas and I'll have extra presents.
I actually saw a very cute and cool thing on Instagram the other day. It was a story you put up, and you were playing and your two kids were singing with
oh
you,
God,
right?
Yeah.
And the bit where you have to give it a bit of power, you couldn't even hear you because they were literally screaming.
They're gassed. They're just mad.
But it was lovely because it was like, here's a pops and his kids, and they're singing the words of his song.
I get into the car and I was like, oh, what do you want to put on to the kids? And then my 4-year-old daughter was like, put on Gotta Run. And she's singing her heart out, and I was like, it's mad. It's really cool.
But you're a rock star to her.
Yeah, it's weird to... that I'm not just dad for her, because she sees all these videos and stuff, and she's like, is that you? It's like, yeah. So that's cool. I love it.
Mad. Okay, we'll go on to the second song that you picked, which is another high energy song, Mark.
Yes.
Crying Shame.
Yes.
Why did you pick this one?
This one's a deeper one. So we start off with a positive one, but this one is kind of, Crying Shame is kind of a song about being neglected, mistreated, and always trying to fix it. Like, you know, like a relationship that you're always trying to fix, or a friendship or whatever. It's, and you, no matter what you do, no matter how hard you try, it's never going to resolve itself. And then there has to be a point where you call it. So it's kind of a deeper one.
What did you draw on for this?
Inspiration-wise? Nothing really. Yeah, just it's one of those songs that kind of poured out of me, because it was like, which is relevant to what it's about. And it just felt like that. Sometimes a song just falls out of you like that. And then I sometimes don't even really know what I'm talking about until it's done. And then I'm like, oh, I see what my subconscious is telling me, you know. And yeah, sometimes there's just nothing you can do to change things. And you have to just accept that. And then once you accept it, and I feel like songwriting helps me understand and accept.
I guess, too, you've been in the music business quite a long time. And sometimes you do come across fickle kind of relationships, people who promise more than they can deliver.
Yeah. Oh, big time. That happens a lot. Fortunately, I've just started working with a label in the US. So this is the first tour with them. And I finally found like a group of people in that are as enthusiastic, as excited, as ambitious, as, you know, everything that I feel, they're also feeling. And so I'm really, really excited for the future.
Yeah, what does it mean to you? I mean, what kind of opportunities is this going to open up for you now with this label?
I think a lot more touring, which would be good. to get out there. We're going to try break into the festival scene, which I've never done before. I've done a couple of festivals, but I've never done the scene. I'd love to do that. I feel like we're such an energetic live band. Like we're a raw, energetic band. I'd love to...
Perfect for a festival.
For a festival, I think it'd be really cool. More promo, getting the music out there properly. I've for years, I've been doing it by myself. I put out a release and be like, hey, why isn't anything happening?
It's a hard slog, isn't it?
It really is. And then this is the first time working with a team of people that are professionals. And now I see what has to go into it, that side of things. And I'm like, God, I didn't do any of that. I was like, and I was always trying. I was sending my songs off for reviews and stuff. And it just 99.9% of the time you wouldn't hear back.
It's so frustrating, isn't it?
It is.
Because, I mean, when we first would have come across each other, I was involved in music management with bands.
Yeah.
And that was the one thing that used to make me want to bang my head off the wall.
It's a thankless job, isn't it? It's
My God. Like, I guess I was naive going into it. Because not only are you trying to manage all of this and do all the PR, you then have to try and get the gigs. But ultimately, when you're managing a band then, it's like spinning plates.
It really is.
Dealing with the personalities, I found, was more challenging.
Yeah. And even trying to get, like, even rehearsals and plans and everything's an effort, a massive effort, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard. Yeah, if someone explained it to you going into it, you'd just be like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah. The opening line of the song, I love them. What a crying shame, throw my love right down the drain. I'm suffering again, it's the last time. I wish that you could see all of my agony from the way you treated me, but I know that.
Yeah.
Girl.
Like I said, a little bit deeper on this one than the last.
Okay, so we'll have a listen to this, and then we will come back and chat some more. Very angry finish.
Yes. I remember going into the vocal booth with a bottle of whiskey, actually. a bottle of Jameson Black Barrel. And we had most of the song done. And he said, right, do you want to go in and do the main vocal? And I was ready to just smash it out. And I really put everything into that one.
Yeah, because as the song goes on, you're getting angrier and angrier, and it's kind of like
you got to put yourself in the place of and I think that reflects then as a genuine, authentic
authenticity.
Yeah. When you hear it, yeah,
because when you the bridge part before your last chorus,
yeah,
the guitar riff with the "Oh, set me free, you got to set me free," that just builds and builds with it. And I was wondering, the character, the she in this, or it could be a he too, but we say the she in it, does she get a kick from the control that she seems to have over the guy?
Well spotted. Very well spotted. That's exactly right.
Yeah, because the line, "Break the chains you wrapped around your memory, set me free."
Yeah. It's like mind games.
Yeah.
Control, never knowing where you stand, and then just being like, I want out.
And you often wonder, people like that, what the hell are they even doing in a relationship if that's their course of control? I guess it's all a control thing, and ultimately, you know, the problem is with them.
Yeah, yeah. And then, yeah, once you know that there's nothing you can do to fix that, you gotta call it.
Yeah.
Sometimes you gotta call it.
Yeah. Now, when you write songs, Mark, and this is a question I ask every guest, is it words first, or is it melody on the guitar first, or is it a bit of both, or does it change with each song for you? But, you know, what's your songwriting style? What comes to you first?
I suppose it is a mixture of the two. I would just pick up a guitar, but I like to, like, stop writing songs for a little bit and let this, like, build up happen. I've this weird system, and then, like, three or four songs will come out at once, and it's like, like I was saying, it kind of pours out of you. Out of your subconscious, you're like, whoa, where did that come from? Like, sometimes it could be like three or four songs in a day then, and I'm like, whoa, it's like all built up. But I usually just pick up an acoustic guitar and just start playing, and then I'd have a melody in my head, and then I'll just start writing the lyrics.
Are you ever tempted, like, you have this thing you said where you leave it off and you let them build up, but are you ever tempted within that period where it's nearly bursting to come out of you that you just want to...
Oh, my wife will walk by going, you need to go away and write a song. She's like, yeah, she knows. And then, like, she'd be, oh, you're in great form today. And she was like, did you write a song? And I was like, did you start fresh? It's like one of those. I think when you're writing rock music and performing rock music, it is built up aggression, and it can be frustration, and it can be a lot of different feelings, you know, and you try to capture that in your songwriting then.
Must be great having such a supportive wife.
It is. It is. She's also trying not to think about the tour until it just happens. But yeah, it's not easy for her either, you know, but super supportive. And luckily, that's why, you know, now that we've, you know, worked with the label and more positive things are happening, it's because we did the harder part, you know. So I feel like because we stuck out the hard part and didn't, you know, it would have been easier many times to just been like, you know, gotta stop this and do something more.
Get a 9 to 5. Safe, you know? Safer, yeah.
Yeah. But then you see safe jobs all the time being not so safe anymore as well, you know.
But you wouldn't have been true to yourself if you went for the safe option, and that's who she fell in love with.
And Claire knew that as well.
That's who she fell in love with.
Yeah, she said, oh, you'd be such a pain in the ass if you gave it up. She said, I wouldn't be able to put up with you.
Yeah.
She's right too.
Yeah. Did she ever get to follow you over on some of the tours?
Yes. We always, I think that's one thing we really try and protect, like, that Claire's involved as well, you know. So on this upcoming tour, we have a show at the Whiskey Go-Go in Hollywood.
Oh man. And what an iconic venue.
She's going to fly out for that show, and that's halfway through the tour, so it's like a week and a half into the tour or whatever. So she's going to come out, and then we have a day off in LA, and then the show, and then a show down in San Diego, and then she flies home. So a quick, like, the kids are in school, her parents are, thank God, her parents are going to...
So it's going to be like a cheat day.
Yeah, and it's going to be, I'm really looking forward to that. The whiskey show is going to be crazy.
Have you played there before?
I have played the Viper Room.
That was owned by Johnny Depp, wasn't it?
What was it? His brother, right?
Because that's where
Johnny Depp. Yeah,
yeah. That's where, what's his name, passed of
River Phoenix.
Outside.
Oh yeah,
River Phoenix.
Yeah, no,
died
Johnny
outside.
Depp did own it. Yeah, that's right. It was on the goal list to play the Viper Room, and we did that. We actually headlined that a couple of years ago, but not realizing that it's really small.
Really,
really small. It's like it's a really small room, and we were like, oh my God, we had loads of friends come down to the show, and we're like, oh, we were selling out the Viper Room, you know. And it was like not that many people in the end. But the whiskey is obviously more people, but it's still not huge, you know.
Mm.
I think it's about 600 people or something.
But it's iconic. I mean, the Doors played there.
I know.
Everybody has
Guns N' Roses, and like so many bands made their name there. And we actually have quite a lot of people coming down to that, industry people coming down to that show.
And is it that kind of a
exciting
vibe?
It is.
That's the kind of vibe there, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, so we're going to go to the Rainbow beforehand for a couple of beers and meet some of the people that are coming down. A couple of exciting things happening there with industry people. One TV show in particular that I'm hoping to get a song featured on. And they're going to come to the show. We're going to absolutely rock out, and hopefully something comes from that.
Isn't it class though, right? I was talking to somebody in work earlier about you and that you were coming in, and just kind of about your career to date and all this. And what she remarked was, it's amazing. She goes, we have this guy from Cork who's doing so well for himself, touring in the States and the brand of music that you play. She goes, like, why didn't I know about it?
Yeah. Yeah, it is extremely hard to get, well, airplay, I suppose, is one thing, but even just like media and stuff, like, obviously not going to say names of things that don't get back to you, but like all of them, just it's nearly impossible to, like, it's very frustrating, but I understand that it's the style of music, it's not on the radio, it's not that extremely popular, you know, it's not pop music, it's not rap music, it's not what's flying around the place on the radio and stuff, so.
Yeah, as a fan of music, I have to say I find that very frustrating too, because I love rock music, and there was a time when it was cool to have it on, and you had your 10-minute version of Stairway to Heaven playing on the radio.
Yeah.
And now, no.
I know, but I feel like...
And even some classic rock radio stations don't play classic rock.
That's true.
And I'm not naming names here.
Yeah. It's true, but I genuinely do see a revival in it. And you've got to think like that anyway. You've got to be hopeful. But there's a huge market in the US. And, you know, there is places in Ireland where it's fantastic to go play as well. Mm. And the UK. We had a really good UK tour earlier this year.
And that's the thing. I mean, you could do a load of gigs in Ireland and they'd be very well received and very well attended, but it just doesn't transfer then to airplay.
Yeah, yeah. It's a strange one. It really is. And I think if we go work really, really hard on these couple of US tours that we have throughout the next... Well, I just got my visa for 3 years, so it's going to be a 3-year
project.
Everything, throwing everything at it. And I think at the end of that, I think maybe if we do really well, it'll be more supported at home when we come back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're kind of doing the round the world attempt to get noticed in Ireland.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, you know, there's like, look at what the Fontaines DC are doing right now. They're blowing up everywhere and they're an incredible live band. There's a lot of bands that went away and did that. And I'd be happy if that's the case, you know.
You know what? It'd be okay too, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
To have an amount of anonymity in Ireland and then you can't walk down the street in the States. That'd be a nice complaint to have.
I'll take it.
Now, but this isn't your first time either. I mean, like going back, I always remember and how I first found out who you were is like you played at the MTV European Awards up in Belfast.
That's
way
right.
Back when.
That was the Voodoo's time.
Yeah. How did that happen? How did that come around?
Oh, we were a lucky old band. We were like, we started out playing gigs in Spain and in like, you know, the pubs on a strip of a place called Cabaroig, which a lot of people in Cork would know actually, because a lot of people have houses out there because you'd meet so many people from Cork there. But we just were playing and all of a sudden just it was like, will we write some songs? And we were kind of the first original band to be writing and performing original music. And luckily, Radiohead's manager was on a golfing trip and popped in for a pint and then was like, are these your songs? And that was the start of the Voodoos being taken seriously. So we went and recorded in London an EP and then moved to Ireland. He said, you got to go create a fan base now. So we gigged all over Ireland and it actually went really well. It was a really fun time.
Mm.
And out of the songs that we did, one song called Yesterday's Future got a lot of support. And then we uploaded it to the MTV site because there was like bands from all over Europe fighting for this slot. I think it was 10,000 bands.
Wow.
And we put in Yesterday's Future. And because we'd just been touring so much, we had a lot of people going in voting, getting behind it. Then it went to the judges and then we got a phone call to we can open up the awards. Which
what was
insane.
That like when you got that call? I mean, you were young then, weren't you?
Very young. And the MTV guy was just like, I'm really sorry, you know, when he rang me. Well, they gave us some warning. They're like, you're in the top 10. And then you're in the top 5. And then he rang again and said, okay, it's the last 3. We're making a decision today. So it was really like, come on, just, you know, okay. And then he rang me and we're all sitting around. We're all having a drink because we knew it was coming. He goes, I'm really, really sorry, Mark. And I was like, okay, no worries. No, he goes, no, I'm sorry. You're going to have to pack all your bags and come up to Belfast for the awards. And then we did it was a very Simon Cowell-esque moment. You know? And we ended up absolutely delighted by it. And we went straight from that into a US tour. And it was all crazy for a few years from there. Crazy.
I'd say you didn't know your arse from your elbows,
no,
did you?
We didn't know what was going on. And we were too young. We didn't capitalize on it. The fact that we played to 15,000 people and we were like out partying with like Lady Gaga and Snow Patrol and Bruno Mars all at this party. We were like, what's going on? And then we went straight from that into Shiprocked in the US and we were out with like Buckcherry and Hinder and Queensryche and Candlebox and all on a boat. And we're like, what's going on with our lives? And it was just 0 to 100. And then, yeah, I wish we were a few years older.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Do you feel that you were probably too young to appreciate it?
Yeah.
At the time.
Totally. And yeah, just didn't really know what was happening. And the fact that I experienced that and then I've come away from it and then started doing this, I look at everything a lot more maturely now with tours, with opportunities, with speaking to people in the industry and just a million other things now. So I suppose I had to do that to get to this point. You know?
Yeah, because was it through Voodoos then where you struck up your friendship with Jeff Tate?
Yeah, because we actually wrote a song together and on that tour that we did.
But how bizarre, how pinch yourself was, I mean, come on, my favourite song of all time is Silent Lucidity.
Yeah, such a great
of
song.
All time. I just think it's the most gorgeous, gorgeous song.
It's unbelievable.
But like Queensryche have so many other amazing
huge songs,
Operation
yeah.
Mindcrime, what an album.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Yeah.
But you obviously knew who Queensryche were.
Yeah.
And now you're writing with them.
It's weird. It was really weird. And like you even hear like interviews on like if YouTube and stuff, you'd hear Metallica saying, well, we're inspired by Queensryche. And like all of a sudden everyone just in Jeff's house writing songs. You know, it was just crazy. He actually phoned me up and said, oh, do you want to work on my record? And I ended up, one of his albums, I ended up contributing 3 or 4 songs to. And it was just like so weird to hear Jeff singing lyrics that I'd wrote. And like, I was like, what's going on here? And we're like, genuinely like the best of friends.
You're like family because I see it in your posts all the time.
It's gone to that point, you know, and yeah. if I'm looking for advice or if I find an album I love, like I'd be texting him saying, oh, check out this new Blue October album. And he'd be like, oh, wow. And he'd be, you know, sending back and forth. And we just have a really lovely relationship. And his family are like my family now as well.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Okay, we'll move on to the third song that
yes.
you picked. And we're taking it a step down now, in a way.
Yes.
Bottled Up. Why did you pick this one, Mark?
Bottled Up is kind of the concept, like the whole record is kind of like a build up of emotion, you know. It's like, and you know, some people let it sit inside them and bottle up and then it blows. And that's kind of what I was like with this record. I was like, am I going to do another one? Am I going to put myself through this? Is it time to call it a day? Am I getting too old? I was even thinking that. I was like, I don't even know if I can do it. I don't know if what way it was going to go. And I said, especially with COVID as well, and it was just like, is there even going to be a music industry? Is there even going to be venues afterwards? So Bottled Up is kind of like all those emotions.
Was that a scary time for you as a musician? Never mind as a person, because, you know, there was periods where we were all quite frightened, especially when COVID first came in and nobody knew and we just heard the word pandemic and we know what happens in a pandemic. People tend to die by the bucket load.
Yeah.
But take that aside. I mean, after a while, I think we kind of settled into it.
We did.
But the entertainment industry was the first hit and the last to be bailed out.
It really was. And it was because I was in the US when it started and the whole tour was just, there was a knock on the bus one day and was like, look, this thing looks serious. No more shaking hands with people at the merch booth or hugging or signing things or whatever. All of a sudden it was like, okay. I remember reading some stuff on Twitter and stuff and I was saying to the guys, I was like, I actually think this is going to, like, this is really bad. I think everything's going to be shut down. And they're all like, no, it's not. It'll be fine. And then all of a sudden, like, plug was pulled, tour was over and came home. And on the selfish side of things, it was really cool to be home and the world stop. Like, obviously, the fact that it was a pandemic is horrific. Like, but in terms of just chilling out with the family, with the kids, and really having like really amazing family time. I thought that was the nice part of it.
A lot of people, I think, really, they took that from it, didn't they?
Yeah. And it was nice that the world slowed down, and, you know, that was the positive side of it. Obviously, the whole, like, the industry was destroyed. You know, people died. It was like, it was just this horrific time. And it's even weird, like, even when you're saying come into the studio, I was like, there's a part of your brain still that's like, is that allowed? It's like that came into my head for 2 seconds. I was like, oh my God. And then I was like, oh my God, it is allowed. And it'll be great, you know. And it's really nice to do that because it's a whole different vibe, isn't it? So yeah, but to answer your question, it was a nice time, but then it was time to worry about the future, you know.
How long into it? Because everything, there's always a kind of fluffy period at the start of everything. Where it's like, this is different. This is fine.
Well, I remember I was coming home from my March like gigs for Patrick's weekend. Like, you know, I have full schedule to come back to. And then all of those were cancelled. And I was like, oh, that'll be fine. And then it was like, okay, for the foreseeable, like my booking agent was like, all your gigs are gone. Like, it's like, I don't know what we're going to do. That was the part where I started getting scary. I was like, what are we going to do? And then I turned my attention just to set up a little home studio in my bedroom and just started writing and hanging out with the kids.
You're one of the lucky ones because I know a lot of musicians who had zero inspiration to write.
Yeah, I heard that too. And I think because I had so many song ideas on the tour and stuff, and I was always like voice noting my ideas on my iPhone. And then I was like, oh, this is a cool idea, but I didn't have time to finish it, so I'll come back to it. So by the time I got up to my room and I set up my computer and I was like, oh, I actually have a lot to work with here. But then I ended up not really using those and just coming up with new ideas. And that's kind of what happens because I'm too ADD for like sitting listening to something. I have voice notes where I'm teaching myself the song because I know I'll forget. I'm like, these are the chords. And like, I'd actually speak out what I'm doing so I wouldn't forget. And then I'm just too ADD. I'm like, it doesn't matter. I'll just write a new one.
I guess if it's not going to stay with you, then was it
That's
special
kind of the
enough?
Thing. And I do think that because sometimes I, like, even in the shower or whatever, I'd start singing the melody and be like, oh my God, I did that like months ago. So that means something. And I go back to it. But if it hasn't, if I listen to it on a voice note and I'm like, I don't really remember this, I'm like, nah, it's not. You know, you can tell it's weird. You just work up a system yourself, what works and doesn't work.
Yeah, yeah. And one thing too, I wanted to touch on your voice. Your voice is killer, man.
Thank you very much.
But you've got this, when, I mean, we're going to hear it now. We've got a couple of songs coming up where it's a little bit more chilled. So you hear that side of your voice. But in the first two songs, I mean, it is power and to it.
Thank you very much. It's definitely changed a lot in the last couple of years.
Do you think your voice has matured in a way the older you've got?
Just found what I'm able to do and what I'm not able to do. And even like the first band I was in, the Voodoos, I had an awful American twang to my
an awful lot of Irish people do that.
Yeah,
they sing.
And I kind of came away and I found my own songwriting style. So I suppose the early days of writing songs, I was just directly inspired by something, and it was like I could be listening to a Counting Crows album and it sound like, you know, the most American twang or like anything like that. And now I don't think of other bands that I'm writing a song, I don't think of getting inspiration from a certain lyric, or I just do it for me. And now that kind of comes across on this whole new record. I'm like, it's all the songs have the same vocal style because it's not trying to copy anything.
Yeah, because you have, I'm a massive fan of The Voice, but what I love is when you go for it, it just sounds so natural and it sounds right.
Yeah.
You know, it's not forced.
And I pick a moment
to do it.
It's
not put on.
Yeah.
You know, you're not trying to mimic anybody.
No, no.
You're just being you.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I love.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, so we'll have a listen to this third song and we'll come back and chat some more. This is the third song that Mark has picked this week, and this is called Bottled Up. All the might, all the might. Whoa.
myself that it's nothing, a warning sign that has lasted a year, that I hope would just disappear, no it won't, I'm wishing still, oh, there's no need to worry, I am gonna be fine.
Love the way you hold the note when you say, oh, I'm keeping all your secrets buried inside. I love it.
Thank you very much.
I love
You're one of the first people to hear that as well, because it's not released.
That's well, not- I feel honoured. I also love, there's plenty of lines I love in this. I've bitten my tongue one too many times. All my words get trapped inside. Do they?
Yeah. Do you know when you kind of keep everything in and you've a lot, all the world's pressures and other people's offloading on you? And you take it all in, and eventually
like
it's
a sponge.
Like, yeah, and then eventually it's like, it's got to come out some way.
Yeah, because the when you go, I hit the floor from a dizzy spin, there must be something that I'm keeping in. I really feel at that point of the song, you can feel the frustration starting to build up.
It starts to affect your health, and it starts to affect everything in your life, and you don't even realise it's from not being authentically yourself and being 100% true to yourself.
And I also think... I think we're in a better place now in the world, but I also think we're still not quite there with mental health.
No. And I was like, that's the one song on the record where I feel like I am speaking about my mental health from that time, where it's like, don't even know how to say how I feel or whatever. And it's hard because everyone else was battling their own, you know, it was a tough time for everyone.
During that time, when you were quite literally, you were at home playing your guitar, writing songs, but you weren't able to play.
Yeah.
What kind of a person were you to be around at that time?
Probably annoying. If my wife was here, she would say that anyway. But yeah, I think you do a lot of reflecting with that much time. And then I genuinely was just being like, oh, I don't know if I can, like, if I'm good enough to do this. Or you do a lot of self-doubt with that much time. And like an idle mind's not great. Like when you're busy and busy, it's sometimes good, but obviously good to step back and see things that need addressing as well. And I think that's what kind of Bottled Up is about, realizing that there's some things you need to address before you can progress.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like that's where I'm at now. I've kind of, this album has put all of that on the table. This new record, it's like the EP is called Nothing to Lose, because that's how I feel. I was like, coming into this new music, I literally don't have anything to lose. It's like, if I give it absolutely 100% of everything I got, I can walk away in a couple of years going, well,
I gave it everything.
No, yeah. And with this, I've never been happier with a record. And working with Sasha has made that feel like this is the best version of myself that I can get. He got that out of me. He was like, working with him was a dream. Honestly, it was unbelievable. And now working with this team, it's all like really, really exciting, and I'm really, really grateful for that.
What's the album going to be called, Mark?
It's going to be called Peace in the Panic.
Peace in the Panic. Yes. I like that.
Thank you very much.
I like that.
Thank you.
Because it kind of sums up what we've just been talking about.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. I actually remember it was COVID and the, where was it, 2 kilometres or 5 kilometres?
Oh, the 2 kilometre LG.
Yeah. Back, and there's like a woods, like maybe 4 or 5 kilometres from our house. And we went there like breaking the law, you know, rock and roll. Went for a walk with my wife, and we were just like, whatever way conversation we're having, Claire just said something like, she goes, God, it's just so frustrating. But like, everyone's just trying to find a little bit of peace in the panic, you know? And I go,
ding, ding.
Wheels turning.
Wow.
And I went straight home from our walk and I wrote Peace in the Panic, which is the last track on the album. And okay. It's a real Pink Floyd-y, trippy song. Nobody's heard it yet. There's Hammond in it. Like, it's got this really cool vibe. And that's going to be the outro of the album. And it's all about what we're talking about.
That's unbelievable. And I guess just from talking to you, this is like you're the phoenix rising out of some kind of flame here. It seems like you've kind of found yourself. You found your true self.
That's how I feel. That's genuinely how I feel. I feel with the new record, with everything that's happening, it was like, it's authentic, it's real, it's exactly how I feel. I'm not afraid to write a song that exposes me anymore.
Mm.
Whereas before I'd be like, oh, that's a bit too obvious that that's about that, or God, will people think I'm mad? Like, you know, writing, like even in Bottled Up that we just played there, it was like, there's a couple of lyrics in it, it's like, is he insane? Like, you know, but I think when I put all that out there, I just feel great afterwards, you know, and it's like, yeah, I feel like I'm 100% where I need to be.
That's fab, because I always say it, I think I probably said it in every episode, and if anybody listens to them, they're probably going, would he ever shut up? I always have the most admiration for a songwriter, because you are quite literally putting yourself out there. And once the record is out there, everybody,
yeah,
you know, now the beauty in with music and lyrics is people then will, oh, they'll get something from it,
yeah,
which may be completely removed from the subject content of the song, but still.
Yeah.
But I just think it's so brave.
Thank you very much.
You know?
Thank you very much.
And I love in the bridge, I called it the bridge, it's just before the last chorus. But I really feel that it comes to a head. I'm all bottled up, ready to blow. Some things I wish I didn't know. My mind feels like it's under attack from all the shit I've been holding back. And then this line, you just say it about 6 times and it's all your fault.
Mm-hmm.
Are you blaming you?
Yes. You read into those really well, actually. You've got me on everything so far. And it's all your fault, yeah. And I was hoping that some people would think that I wasn't talking about myself. But then again, just being honest and everything, I was like, yeah, I was blaming myself, you know.
But you come out of it. Like, I mean, and that builds. But then you come out of it with, oh, there's no need to worry. I'm going to be fine.
Yeah.
I'm keeping all your secrets buried inside.
Yeah.
It's like you're like,
phew. I got it out and now I'm good again.
Fab.
Yeah. And I was lucky to have my friend Cloda singing on the backing vocals on that, because she was in Germany at the same time recording her album. So she actually features on backing vocals on maybe 4 tracks on the on the album, which is really cool. It's nice to have a Cork connection from it.
Yeah.
We were both in Germany.
And for the listeners, Cloda is one half of Fire and Water.
Yes, with Tomás McCarthy. Yeah.
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 Who we were just saying they've got exciting stuff coming out in
loads.
The future.
So. They have amazing things happening, so you'll have to get them on and chat about all that as well.
Oh, 100%. And you know what's beautiful is these Cork people, you included, and you're going all over the world playing to people, and we should be championing that. And I think we should be proud. I'm very proud of you.
Thank you very much for saying that. Thank you. We even played a show together a couple of weeks ago with Steve and Tomás and Cloda and Jeff. All of us did a winery show where they just turned this winery into a music venue for one night only.
Oh, wow.
And it's the coolest thing ever.
Where was that, man?
That was in a place called Eichstätt near Freiburg.
Okay.
So that was fun. So we're still recovering from that. that was the last big gig, and now the next one is the US.
Yeah, there'd be some blowout there one of the nights, I imagine.
Oh, big time.
Now, the final song that you've picked, Mark, and I love this song, I have to say, I really, really do. It's called Your World.
Yes.
Why did you pick this?
Well, this is an older one. This is from a few years back. Probably the most personal song I've ever written. It's about my son, Noah. And I wrote this song very shortly after he was diagnosed with autism. And we were trying to figure out everything. We were just young parents that just became parents. And I remember Claire was at work and I sat down and I was like, she's like, you're coping really well with everything, because it was a really hard time and he didn't have any words and it was a really crazy time. And I remember writing the song and being like, I didn't even think I was going to show Claire. And I was like, you know what? It's just too personal. And she came home from work and I worked up the courage and I said, do you want to hear a song? I like recorded it on my computer. And I was like, do you want to hear a song? And then I played it and she was bawling her eyes out. And I was like, she was like, oh my God, you have to release that song. And I said, no way. I was like, not a chance. I was like, it's way too personal. And I was like, she was like, exactly the reason why you should. Because she was like, other people will be feeling how you're feeling. And you might be able to bring some sort of something to them as well, you know. And after she cried for about half an hour, I decided to work up the courage to go record it. And recorded it and was really, really glad I did. Because I've got, like, for the last few years, I've been getting messages from all over the world, from parents, from people. Like, when I play at shows, like, you look down and there's people crying at shows. And it's like, oh, you're at a rock show and there's people crying their eyes out. And it's just, it's really nice to have a song that people can really connect to.
What was it like as a young parent when you got that diagnosis?
I didn't really know what was going on. It was like one of those. It was like another thing where life was going really, really fast and trying to juggle music. And then I was just really worried about my son then. I was like, okay, when we got the diagnosis. But when we got the diagnosis, then we knew we were on a path to figuring out what we needed to do. We knew before the diagnosis. It wasn't like a shock or anything, but we knew then.
You had an idea. Was the diagnosis just kind of confirmed it?
It just confirmed it,
for you?
Yeah. Okay. But then when you do get it, then it's just that reality check. Because we're going into the meeting being like, well, we know what the answer is and we know what's going to happen. And then when the words came out of the lady's mouth, I was like, okay, so we're going to have a few challenges ahead. And we've had challenges. They've been tough. Now Noah's nine. He's nine and
Chini Mac,
coolest kid in the whole world.
I remember him being born like it was yesterday.
Yeah. Wow. And like he's got speech. He's got.
How long did it take him to get speech, Mark? I mean, how severe was his autism?
He was very delayed. He was very delayed. He was, maybe 4 years old really when he was like putting a sentence together. But we're grateful that he was verbal and he's able to tell us things that he feels now. He's obsessed with music. Absolutely obsessed with music.
And he knows the words of your songs.
He does. And he's so writing his own songs.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. And he's just the coolest kid. It's been up and down journey, but like, I mean, the best. He's literally made me who I am today. And
because in this song, I'm the proudest man alive. And I know that the struggles will keep coming our way, but we'll face them and survive. I'm the proudest man alive.
Yeah.
You were so proud of him.
Yeah.
So, and he, I get what you're saying in that he's moulded you into who you are.
Totally.
As much as you're moulding him into being a little rock star.
He's taught me patience, love, like everything, you know. And it's like, if he's going through a battle, I'll fight it with him. And that was kind of the... It's like, okay, this is what we're doing. Let's do it together and I'll figure it out. No matter what, I'm going to figure it out. You know, that was my determination, Claire's determination. It was just like, we are going to like figure it out. We're not going to just, you know, worry about it. We're just going to face it head on.
Cool. Okay, we'll have a listen to it and we'll come back and we'll chat some more. So this is the final song that Mark has picked for this week's Foreplay podcast. This is the very beautiful and special Your World.
Proudest man alive. last man alive.
Wow, it's a real anthem.
Thank you very much.
But it's also probably your most personal song, isn't it?
Absolutely. I don't think I'll ever get more personal than that.
And I love in verse 2, I love all of verse 2, I would give anything to get inside your head to realise exactly what it is you meant. I won't rest until I know every move and I see that smile, and I love this, that takes me to your world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember bringing him to bed one night and looking into his eyes, and that line came to me there, because I was like, I could see his world. I was like, I got to get into your world, because he was struggling with our world, you know. So I was like, I'll get into your world and we'll figure it out.
And you told me a beautiful little story there when the music was playing. You brought him on tour with you and all in the UK.
Yes, this year we had a UK tour in the summer. And we were in Germany first. I did a run in Germany, and I think it was like 5 or 6 shows, and then we were going on to the UK. And my wife rang me and said, like, no, I was really, really struggling with you again. I don't know what we're going to do, because the UK was then like 2 more weeks or whatever. And she said he's really upset. And I said, okay, I'll book him a flight and he can come out in the door. And I spoke to Susan, who's Jeff's wife, and she like runs the whole show. And I was like, would that be okay? And she was like, that'd be amazing. She was like, absolutely. Like, that's the kind of people we have on the tour. It's like, nobody was like, what, you're bringing a kid on the tour? Everyone was like, amazing. Oh, no more coming. Like, unbelievable the way everybody took him in. But I flew home, got him. The next day, flew out to the UK, started the tour, and he was just in his happy place, because he loves music, loves all the guys, and he was watching the shows. My dad was there as well, so he was minding him when I was playing, and he'd have his ear defenders to keep the volume, but then they'd be gone, and he was rocking out. And loved it, loved watching Jeff play.
And the crowds don't bother him, or the lights or all that. No. He loves that.
Loved it. And like, he'd be sweating after it. He'd be headbanging and everything. And he just loved the tour. But like, now he understands what I do when I go away. And so I actually had to tour. So he came home, Claire came out to London and got him, and there was a couple of more shows. Because he had to go back to school. Because he took a week off school and had to go back. And he was so relaxed when he went back, because he knew what I was doing, who I was with, what exactly I did for a living. And then he's like, okay, now I don't have to like stress about him, because I know exactly what's happening.
And that obviously helps now ahead of you going to the States.
Yeah,
for these month either side of Christmas. But for him,
yeah,
it's easier for him now, because he gets it. Yeah.
So what I'm going to do is, like, this is going to be the first time I'm really bad at social media. Right, so bad that now the label have hired a social media manager. Right, so that's how bad I am. So now I'm going to be, and this is for Noah as well, I'm going to do a daily, I'm going to document the whole tour, and I'm going to do a daily
amazing
thing, and I'm going to send it to Noah every day, so he can see what state I'm in. I mean, what part of America, not what state. I mean, how much whiskey I drank the night before. but he can see exactly what's happening, the boss, the crew, and he'll see all the boys.
He's met them all, sure.
He's met them all.
He's part of the crew.
So he'll just be like, oh, this is where Dad is. And he'll come home from school, he'll watch it on his iPad, and it'll cam, and it'll help that I'll be forced to put stuff on my Instagram and Facebook then.
So yeah, I think it's important that you do that too, though, so that people on this side of the world start recognising what you're doing.
Yeah, I'm brutal for it, and I'm really, really going to make the effort now with this EP that's out. I suppose this will be out by the time it comes. It's out the 2nd of December.
It'll be out. It'll be out by the time the public gets to hear this.
Yes, so that'll be the Nothing to Lose EP, and so that'll be out, and then the album in March, and with the tours, and I'm going to really make an effort to you know, be better on social media and to show people what's happening.
The next 12 months, I know you've got this tour now, but what's the next 12 months looking like for you, Mark?
It's more and more touring, and I'm going to try to get back into the studio next year as well, because, you know, the tour is December and January. There might be a pocket of time in February where everything's kind of quiet, and might jump into the studio and start, even though the first piece in the Panic album
you're always creating,
maybe like go in and do some recording and work with Sasha again. He's stuck with me now forever.
That's class.
Yeah, so we just worked up such an amazing friendship, and Yeah, he stuck with me.
Now, you've been a lot in America. How does Europe and the UK... Because that, rock and roll is huge there.
That's on the cards now as well. We're in negotiations. I hate when people are like, I can't say. You know? But there's a tour at the moment that we're working on, and I think that would be...
But you can't say.
Yeah,
that's the fact.
Yeah,
you can't.
Like. Yeah, because... Yeah, I can't right now. But hopefully the month of March will be... the end of February, March will be the UK.
Okay.
And then we have... German dates confirmed.
Class.
And then I guess I'll be back to America after that.
Germany is quite a cool place to
I love gigging there. Love gigging there. Really cool crowds as well. They love the rock music.
Yeah, they certainly do. And the one question that I ask everybody before we park this bus, where's your favourite happy place, studio or stage?
Stage.
And why?
It's like being a different person. It's like when I go, like, I could be backstage and we'd just be calm and talking whatever, and then I go to stage and just different. I let everything loose on stage. Don't hold back. I'm not embarrassed about what faces I'm going to make or whatever. Yeah, I think it's like an alter ego thing. It's like
the place where you feel happiest, isn't it?
Yeah.
And besides, I know you have your beautiful family and you're happy there, but you yourself.
Yeah, and I remember doing a gig. We did the House of Blues in Las Vegas, and my wife Claire came out to that show. And it was one of those gigs where it was just magic in the air, and it was an unbelievable gig. And I came back to the dressing room afterwards and I was like covered in sweat and I couldn't breathe. I had to lie on the floor and get my breath back. And then she just looked and she was like, now I really know why you do what you do. She was like, I saw what you just did and how it makes you feel and the release you get from it. And it's like a drug, you know, it's like, and she was like, now I totally get it, you know, totally get it.
How do you deal with that after a gig?
Oh, it's impossible to sleep, so we have to go out for a beer.
Yeah.
We have to go out for a couple of beers. Yeah, it's impossible, but by the time we pack up the show, have a couple of beers, try and get like a bar nearby and then hit the road on the bus or whatever, by then we'll all be just up chatting on the bus about the show and everything. It's
a buzz.
It's late nights.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
And it's a lack of sleep and stuff, but it's totally worth it.
Yeah, are you sleep deprived when you come back from tour?
Yeah, and then it doesn't help when I come back with the kids because it's like it's early.
Straight into
yeah.
It.
So there's not much time for lions anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah. Because I know the Bono's wife, I heard a story that when he comes back from tour, he has to stay. He's not allowed to come back to the house
really?
For about a week after because he's just buzzing.
Wired, yeah. Wired. Even if I do a pub gig here in Cork, I find that. I could be playing a gig in anywhere in Cork and I drive home afterwards and I can't go to bed. I have to go. Like crack a beer from the fridge and watch something on TV for how I have to wind down. And that's just an acoustic pub gig playing cover songs, you know.
Imagine it's this just, tour song.
So when it's the full blown originals rock stuff, it's very hard to come down from it.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Mark, it's been an absolute pleasure.
And thank you so much,
Pierce. Have you in, man.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it. Really appreciate it and really enjoyed it as well.
Thanks, man. Me too.
Thank you.